This show is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky things that are best enjoyed after you see the movie. So any movie we talk about, we recommend you go see. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
Horror. You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Horror.
Alive. It's alive.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome to Oh the Horror, a look at classic and modern horror films from an expert and a casual's perspective. I'm the casual, Steve Allman.
And I'm the quote-unquote expert, Rob Holmes.
I would call you an expert. You've been grooming yourself for this job your entire life.
I would say so, yeah. I mean, I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of horror movies. Probably, I would say, closer on the thousands. Some of them do blur together after a while.
It has been a wild ride for me because, for me, all of these movies have kind of been standing out in their own very, very special way, and especially this one that we're going to be talking about right now.
Yeah, so this week's one is a personal favorite of mine. I remember going into the video store as a kid. We had a Video Express back in Virginia Beach. And I would go in there all the time, and I would see this box art for it. And they had the R-rated version and the unrated version. And I always would debate, you know, do I want to see this just based on the cover and everything? And I'm like, I don't know if this is going to be good. The film was Peter Jackson's 1992 classic, Dead Alive.
So I want to reiterate that video store box art story, because I would go to my family video in Arlington Heights, Illinois every like weekend, and I would see that box art for that VHS, yeah, of like the woman with the skull coming,
yep,
out of her mouth.
Yep.
It's an amazing box art. It's amazing.
Oh, it's
cover. It's perfect. And I was always fascinated by that as a little kid.
Yeah.
And I thought that was super cool and scary, but I was very, very, very kind of wary to actually see it because I knew my mom would never, ever let me. But now I have finally seen it. And I didn't even know this was a Peter Jackson movie until,
yeah,
you actually told me this was a Peter... This wasn't his first movie,
no,
by
this
any
was
means.
No, this was his third film.
Okay.
Its original title is Braindead.
Yes.
But there was also a movie that came out in the U.S. right before called Braindead that starred Bill Paxton and Bill Pullman. So they ended up changing the title to avoid confusion to,
right,
Dead Alive.
So, and I feel like almost both titles are kind of inappropriate for what the movie actually is, because I don't really get the vibe of either Braindead. Like, Braindead seems like a screwball comedy, which is kind of closer to what this,
sure,
is.
Sure, sure.
But Dead Alive sounds like I'm getting like straight up Evil Dead vibes, especially with that box art cover.
Well,
like,
Dead Alive, it's the dead coming alive.
Well, yeah, literally,
so,
if you want to be
so
literal about it, yeah.
Yeah, so this is his third film. His first one was Bad Taste, which he made on an independent budget over weekends across about four years of making this film.
And that was another horror film?
That's a horror film. It's
okay.
A comedy horror. That one definitely has a very indie vibe to it. It's such a ridiculous film. He did all the special effects himself for the most part in that one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he really put a lot of work into it because, I mean, four years over the weekends to get a film done, finally ended up getting the New Zealand Film Commission to help fund the rest of it.
And getting a film done by anybody is hard, but
right,
probably getting a film done in New Zealand is actually quite difficult, like on the scale that which Americans are used to, because it's a bit
Bad Taste isn't, it's very indie. It's very indie,
right,
the way
I
that
can
it's
understand.
Done.
Yeah.
But the fact that he dedicated so much time and a lot of his own money into it, like he funded most of the film himself, that was great. And that finally came out in 1987. He followed that up with Meet the Feebles, which was basically a combination of The Muppets and what would later be Avenue Q on crack. I mean, it is really over the top, sex, drugs, tons of violence, but in a Muppet type capacity.
Right, and a lot of us know Peter Jackson, at least from like when he, in his famous days now, as the director of the Lord of the Rings trilogy and,
mm-hmm,
the King Kong remake and all of these other
big
budget fantasy and science fiction and all these other films.
Right.
But he had very, very, very humble beginnings and kind of just rocketed up to Lord of the Rings status.
Yeah,
kind of from almost obscurity.
I would say after Heavenly Creatures, which got really good reviews and kind of got him more on the art scene circuit.
Sure.
Then he ended up doing The Frighteners in 96.
Right.
Which I love. I mean, that's one of my favorites. I still think the special effects on that hold up really well today. But yeah, I mean, that's Michael J. Fox, like Robert Zemeckis helped to produce it, I think.
And that's kind of what got him on the American scene, or
that
the Hollywood scene.
That definitely got him on the Hollywood scene, because that one actually had a decent U.S. release. I don't think it made a ton of money, but it got his name out there. It got his name out there, and it was like, wow, okay, this guy's got some talent. Let's, you know, use him for some other stuff, and then Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. And then history writes itself. Right. So let's get into Dead Alive.
Wow.
Can I start this one off?
Sure, absolutely.
So I did not know what to expect for this film, and what I got was, I want to say, like, the equivalent of, like, an absurd, kind of a Saturday morning cartoon romp with spectacular gore effects and some fun, like, if there wasn't, like, a Tales from the Crypt Saturday morning narrator thrown in there, I feel like that almost could have worked. Because the entire movie feels, like, in a weird way, disjointed from any sort of reality that I've known.
I would say Dead Alive has a lot of different layers to it, because one part of it is a love story. It's true.
Okay,
so there's a major part of it that is a love story. There's a major part of it that deals with a boy and his mother and the domineering mother figure in it. And there's a history and actually like secrets that come out throughout the film where you find out about his troubled youth and everything. And then at the same time, it is an over-the-top zombie fest. It's very comedic, because you're watching this guy go through this film with these zombies in various different states. And then you end it up at the end of the film with this just bloodbath that goes on for literal bloodbath. Like,
yeah.
Not even, it is considered and heralded as the goriest fright film of all time. I would say that's true. I think it's definitely the bloodiest film that I've ever seen.
I would definitely say that I regret seeing this after I ate dinner, for sure. Because this movie's gross.
It's super gross, but it's all in good fun.
I mean, yes. I can definitely say this is what I would definitely call a technical showcase masterpiece when it comes to horror films. When I say that, when you tell me that there's a lot of like subtext about like a love story and a troubled past with a man's mother,
mm-hmm.
and how he's kind of shackled to caring for her and all of
right.
those things that's preventing him from finding love, like I get that, but I do, like again, and this is, you know, directors still kind of coming into their own a bit for some of those things. I don't think almost any of those things are done at all well, except from the technical side. I think that the acting is kind of is just silly.
I think the
but
acting,
it, but
oh,
it
man.
Kind of needs to be silly.
I think the acting's great. So we start off basically on Skull Island. This is what it was supposed to be.
Right.
So it was supposed to be the same island King Kong was from. In Sumatra, there's a guy from the New Zealand Zoo who is running with a couple of the other people from the island with a cage that contains a Sumerian rat monkey. And
yeah.
If you get bitten by it, it's called Zangaya. So this guy goes out, gets the natives come after him, and he pulls out an Uzi and like
a very offensive kind of portrayal of Aboriginal.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Definitely offensive. He ends up getting scratched by this monkey, and the guys who are with him to transport this back to New Zealand kick him off the car.
Right.
And they see scratches on him, and they're saying, Zangaya. So they cut his hand off. They cut his arm off, and then they see it scratched on his head.
And they're like,
it comes down. We get the cool title sequence of Dead Alive with the animated
blood. And that's really cool. That part's
fantastic. And then, because then you start knowing what you're getting into. You know it's going to be a comedy. You know it's going to be kind of crazy. You know it's going to be super gory and over the top, and the gore is going to look realistic. Because when he comes down with that on the hand, it looks pretty real. Everything, just blood flowing left and right. So then we get an introduction to Lionel and his mother. Lionel's played by Timothy Balm. I think he's amazing in it. It's very...
He's very meek and he's doing the very, like, kind of a, like,
it's kind of thing. It's kind of a more neurotic, meek Anthony Perkins in Psycho and the domineering mother who wants to control every single thing that he does.
Yeah, and it's again, we mentioned the Jason films as like a reverse Psycho. This is kind of like a bit of like a Gonzo kind of manic, again, cartoonish,
absolutely,
like, interpretation of the house looks like the Bates Motel.
And it's massive too. And it's it's a huge house.
And like I could feel they utilized that set very well. Like, oh, yeah. I keep seeing the sort of technical aspects of this film and like they keep showing like a lot of how grandiose the set looks because they put a lot of work into it and they used it very well. And I can see all of these great technical things coming around, but then it's like this weird manic funhouse kind of a vibe. It's a fascinating film. Sorry, continue.
Well, and I think each of the characters are... I love the characters in it. I think they're pretty well-defined throughout. You have Vera, the overbearing mother who only cares about how she looks in society.
Yeah, and she's like, and to which she kind of looks like overbearing and kind of grotesque, like Mr. Burnsy.
Absolutely, like. Absolutely. And then you're introduced to the love interest, Paquita, who works at a local shop. And what really starts off the love affair kind of going on between her and Lionel is that she's talking to, I think it's her grandmother. And her grandmother does a tarot reading for her about who she's going to meet and if she's going to meet a guy. And it seems, you know, she'll recognize him by a certain symbol, the star and the moon. Or I think it's like the star and the crescent moon. Then all of a sudden this card comes up that's terrible. And she's like, what is that? And he's like, oh, nothing. Don't worry about it.
Right.
But she ends up meeting Lionel, and Lionel's bumbling and coming in there to do the order for his mom. And she starts pursuing him. It's pretty great. I mean, you get to see her come over to the house to deliver all the food to him.
I mean, it's an ultimately flawed and stupid premise, but like I love the kind of idea that like she was just crushing on the doctor that was coming into the house or to the shop the other day, and then she's like, you will find a man.
I don't think he was a doctor. I think he was like a milkman.
Oh, he was a milkman? I'm sorry. Like, he was wearing, like, almost a lab coat kind of a thing. But she was crushing on him, and then she's like, you will find a man, and you will know him by his... Like, she's clearly, like, hankering to find love.
Right.
And she's going to go about it any way that she can, and she's going to stay to it.
Absolutely.
And that's a cute, fun way of just, like, her continuously following him along, and he's like, no. I like that kind of dynamic where she's overly aggressive and he's just meek enough to like, no, I got it, my mom, and like I kind of like that.
It's a good dynamic. I mean, she's the one who's pursuant and he's the one who's more hesitant. So she basically tricks him into getting him to ask her to go to the zoo, and it's funny. It's a good little dynamic between the two. And so they end up going over to the zoo. Lionel's mom is obviously very overbearing, so she follows them. You see Lionel at the zoo, and this is where I start really liking where they throw in some of his little backstory on why he's so afraid of certain things. You see him look out at the water when they're at the zoo.
Right.
And you get a flash to something from his past that they allude to throughout the film that they finally get to at the end of it. And they end up seeing the Sumerian rat monkey. It has made its way to the New Zealand Zoo.
Oh, man.
This is all done through claymation and stop motion animation. And
again, one of the first fantastic like uses of. I also want to think that like there was a puppet there at one point.
Probably
for when they crush its skull in.
No, there was definitely for that. So you get to see it kill a monkey. It's super vicious, and then Lionel's mom shows up to kind of spy on Lionel and Paquita.
Yeah.
And Vera gets bit. Lionel has to take her home and start taking care of her. And you can just see her starting to get sick and come down with stuff. You get to see the wound fester on the inside and finally sprays pus and gore all over. I mean, it's violent from the beginning. And it's gory from the beginning. And everything that we see happen with Lionel's mom as she starts to deteriorate, especially during the lunch that they have.
Yeah.
The pus in the pudding, or the custard, rich and creamy. Just how I like it.
And I like how she's like just cringing through this.
It doesn't
meal.
Say anything. The woman from the WLWL does not say a word about what's going on.
No, but that mother is just, I like it. Like, she can't get it together.
Thank you for this. On like, so slow, trying to get through it. Her ear falls off into the custard, and she eats it. And that's when the woman from the WLWL finally is like, screw this, I'm out.
We've had it, yeah.
Lionel just keeps kind of going with it. After this happens, you know, we end up with Paquita coming back over with her dog. The dog ends up getting eaten. One of my favorite lines is, your mother ate my dog! Pulls out the entire what's left of the dog. Well, not all of it.
Yeah. And it's still there.
But nobody freaks out too much about this situation. The fact that his mother just did something that is seemingly impossible. And even during the scene, during the lunch scene, this is a world where the insane can happen, but no one sees it as being too insane.
And I think that's kind of what I had to suspend my disbelief for every time I kept watching these ridiculous situations happen, because there was no meta moment where somebody stops and is like, this is fucking what?
That's what's amazing about it, though. It's watching a live action cartoon, gore filled splatter cartoon happening right in front of your eyes, where you don't even have to suspend disbelief because this is the world that they live in. It's a crazy world.
Right, yeah. And where I see a lot of horror movies kind of ground themselves in reality or something, I haven't really seen that many films that just take a premise and run with it to an nth degree that it almost becomes loony.
And that's what's great. I mean, that is why Dead Alive is such an amazing horror comedy.
Right.
It embraces every single part of it, and it doesn't throw in these questions of logic necessarily.
It embraces it from the jump, because when you see a movie like Evil Dead, Evil Dead starts off quite kind of serious.
Based in reality, for the
exactly.
most part.
Exactly, and then it kind of just like jumps to this weird place
right.
once the crazy stuff starts happening. Crazy stuff has been happening in this movie.
The entire time.
It takes a second for you to actually adjust to that, because there's no kind of ramp up with other movies like this. You're here and you stay here, way mm-hmm. up there in the crazy town, all the way through the movie. And
oh yeah,
it's refreshing. I do like that.
One of my favorite things in the film, when Lionel's mother dies the first time, and the nurse ends up showing up.
And she dies many times. She dies many, many times.
She dies many times. The first time she dies, the nurse shows up. Lionel's mom reaches through her face, rips her head back. Blood sprays out everywhere.
It looks like her fingers are going through her cheeks and out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to conceive what was happening with how you can get the creative people that had to think of that effect to like make the end up.
Mm-hmm.
Like Pez dispenser sort of thing happen.
The Pez is
insane, because we see that Pez dispenser effect
multiple
times
throughout the film. They really embrace each one of these effects, where this is what defines this character as now their living dead version. And then she comes back. What I really love about that scene that they really play up, when he turns the radio on, and everything that's matching, or everything that's happening when his mom's trying
to
attack,
the music.
Is matching it. So he hits her in the head with the vase, and Paquita's upstairs grabbing like a toothbrush and stuff to take to the hospital for Lionel's mother. And then you hear the guy on the radio say, oh, mom, that was your favorite teapot. I can't believe I just broke it. And it just matches so well during that scene. There's so much, it's so layered. So many jokes and gags going on all the time with it.
It's almost to its detriment for me, because I don't feel like a lot of them really land, because they kind of take away from the insanity of what just happened.
That's why this movie is amazing, because the rewatchability on it is... I've seen this film probably 30 or 40 times,
right.
minimum. that's why I keep watching it, because every time you watch it, there's a there's another joke, there's another layer to it, there's
it's
more going on.
It's a very dense movie.
This time I watched it again last night, and during a lot of the gore scenes, I'm really focusing in this time on how they did their practical effects. Some of them, I still don't understand how it was done, especially with the fact that this was a $3 million budget total.
And so, pound for pound, I don't think I have seen this many effects on screen.
No, not this many. I've seen this many effects on screen in CG.
But almost all of them are great.
I've never seen this many practical effects ever put on film where I would say 97% of them are amazing.
Right. And no more than 5 minutes apart from each other.
Oh.
There's always something.
There's always something going on. After you end up with... You know, he's taking people down and keeping them now in the cellar. His mother finally gets out. And then you're thinking, all right, well, he goes off to get the tranquilizers. But he wants to keep them. He's keeping them in the house. He's still going to take care of his mother. And now he's going to take care of this nurse. So when she finally ends up dead, we're introduced to Father MacGruber. Or Magruder,
my favorite character in this film.
Sorry, Father MacGruber, definitely my favorite character in this film. One of the best lines of "I kick ass for the Lord."
That is my favorite line of this film.
It's fantastic. We're introduced to Void and a bunch of other biker gang,
greaser
gang.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, Lionel's gonna go dig up his mom after she has been filled up with formaldehyde, and Peter Jackson ends up being the guy he cameos as the guy who was filling her up, like the lab assistant.
Sorry, I think one of my favorite bits is when the apothecary comes in and he's like, "What have you done with this?" And like, "We got to fix this up." First thing he does, just pokes the eyes back in.
Yep, he just puts his fingers over the eyes, pops them both back
in. Like a pro, like he's done this before.
But she's covered in formaldehyde. Peter Jackson's character, who's basically Robert from Bad Taste, same mannerisms and looks the same, picks up the soaked formaldehyde sandwich and just starts eating it. Like, in laughing like a total moron.
And it's at this point I'm like, where did the Peter Jackson here turn into the Peter Jackson from Lord of the Rings? Like,
I want old Peter Jackson back. I want him to go back to making splatter films, because Dead Alive is the pinnacle of splatter horror. It's one of the only films that I've ever seen. Actually, I think it's the only horror film I've ever seen where I can say, now that is a gore fest. An entertaining gore fest. Not just gore for gore's sake, where it's super graphic and definitely very intense. There's a lot of intense stuff that happens in this film, but it's mainly played for comedic effect. And there's a lot of layers going on, too, with a lot of what's happening. So I would say at this point we've gotten to, he's going to dig up the graves. We get the gang in there. Void becomes Void as we know him in the film, with the torn up rib cage and everything along those lines. The priest shows up in one of these amazing scenes, just does a bunch of kung fu, beats the living shit out of this other greaser guy.
It's a hilarious scene because the clearly stunt double is way more nimble and doesn't have the body shape at all of the priest, but it doesn't matter because you're just so into this.
Well, the footage is sped up, so it makes it look faster and more intense, and it's just goofy and fun, but you're watching this the entire time thinking to yourself, I didn't even know this could be in a film. I didn't know this was actually possible to make as a film.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we've been introduced to Uncle Les as well, the creepy uncle who's got a bunch of herpes sores around his mouth, it looks like.
It's fucking gross.
He's super gross, super creepy.
And he's a sleazeball as well.
Oh, he's a complete sleazeball. At this point now, Lionel has brought the priest, Void, his mother, and the nurse back to his house, and he's feeding them like they're a family, feeding them, it looks like custard with tranquilizer in it, but they're acting like a dysfunctional family. Like, Void puts the spoon through his head, and the mother grabs the food off the back of it, and Void acts like a little child, like a petulant child who's having a tantrum. The nurse and the priest end up having this sexual
They have sex
on the table. She pulls off his lips, so he is missing part of his face now.
And a great moment was when he's like, "Oh, you found your father's videotapes, I see, haven't you?
The stag films. Oh, is this the chambermaid and the donkey?"
As horrified as that is, I got to deal with some zombies boning in my kitchen, thank you very much.
Right, so now he knows that his dad had creepy-ass stag films.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he has to go in there, he pulls the priest away, the priest's lips just pull away and rip off, and you get this amazing effect. Then, right away, we're introduced to the nurse getting pregnant. Immediately, and having a baby
within moments,
a zombie baby within moments. And this was the scene. So, when he takes the zombie baby out to the park,
this was one of my favorites.
It's Peter Jackson's favorite as well. When they finished the movie, they had, I think it was 45,000 New Zealand dollars left over from filming
for this scene.
And so, he said, "Okay, let's film this scene." And that's what they ended up doing. They filmed that entire scene. But that scene makes the movie that much better because it shows that Lionel, despite everything, is trying to still live a normal life.
But
I don't know how he's trying to do this. I mean, the guy is obviously going crazy.
But he's also snapping because he is effectively beating a baby within an inch of its life just so it can behave.
Just so it can behave, but it's not a baby.
It's not a real baby, but it's hilariously like just stomping and throwing a baby all around. He's having a fight scene with a baby.
And the best part is people look at him just like, "Oh, for shame."
It's like,
how could you do that?
How unfortunate.
Not really caring or going and trying to stop him.
As if they're just he's just mistreating that baby. Like, that's a shame for this one instance. But while he's just throwing this child around, like this deformed thing.
Beating the living hell out of it, yeah.
And it looks like a hilarious puppet. It's a hilariously great design for this zombie baby, where it almost looks like Chucky or the Mask in a weird way.
The kid from Mask.
The kid from Mask,
mixed with the doll from Child's Play, yeah.
Because it doesn't look like a zombie. It looks like just a deformed, weird baby.
A very deformed, weird baby. And one of my favorite characters, actually, because a lot of comedic moments, that high-pitched laugh, absolutely amazing. We now are back. He's been pushing Paquita away this entire time because he doesn't want her, I think, getting involved in this because he feels like he has to do all of this on his own. But you're watching him kind of crumble. And he decides, you know, he comes back to the house and Uncle Les, who wanted part of the will, he was saying, "Oh, Vera was going to put me in the will and didn't. I should be getting something out of this," because he's a total sleazeball. He finds the bodies in the basement.
Right.
That have been sedated, so they all look dead. And he's saying, you know, he wants the money and he wants the house. And Lionel just goes with it, you know, because he doesn't want to go to jail over this, because Les begins to call the cops. Which does take a while to call the cops, apparently, in New Zealand. It's a long process.
I mean, they've got a long trek to go. They got to go up to Mount Doom, then come back.
It makes me wonder. It makes me wonder what year this film takes place in. Because it's made in the 90s, but it definitely has...
It looks like a surreal kind of almost 60s thing going
on.
Like
a 50s or 60s going on.
Because with the prams that all the babies were in...
It's the prams when... So at this point, Lionel hears a bunch of noise coming from upstairs. And Les is having a party now that he owns the house. Hundreds of people start piling in. But they're carrying those old school crates of like beer and lager coming in with those old glass bottles and everything.
Again, it's really tough for me to see this at first glance because this movie moves at a pace that is insane.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's great about it.
It goes at a breakneck speed and I almost don't know what's happening. It causes like cinematic whiplash at the amount of things that are being thrown at me on screen, both narratively and like technically,
right?
Because I don't know what to keep up with.
See, and what's amazing about that is not being able to keep up with it. This film was shot only in 11 weeks. How?
That's madness.
It complete madness, and to be as good as it is. So now we get to the final gore scene. He is going to put everyone down and bury them in the basement because Les says, you know, I want you to bury those stiffs. So he injects them with what it says is poison. If he had just looked at the back of the bottle, he would have known that it was an animal stimulant. So now we have super zombies all tearing out of the ground, and they start attacking all the partygoers. Tear them into pieces. This is where the gore gets ramped up past anything we've ever seen already.
And we've seen a lot.
We've seen a lot. At this point, we get rib cages being fully pulled out of people. We have organs being ripped out. One of my favorite scenes, as far as a technical standpoint, is when the woman who asks Lionel when he's going around with food says, tasty, do you have anything else I can nibble on? She puts her hands over her face, scared by what she just saw, and you see Void's hand punch through her face and out of her mouth, and then pulls her around. And that scene, just the way it's cut and the way it looks, looks completely real. There's nothing fake about that at all.
And I think this finale is probably the best technical showcase that this movie has come with, after a stellar
absolutely
showcase of almost
stellar.
Every other effect yeah. being like aces.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else that's this pound for pound. You get your money's worth when it comes to
and
seeing a film
some.
Like, and then some when it comes to seeing a film like this, if you want crazy, awesome effect.
You see someone's get half their face pulled off where it's just a bloody skull. You get to see someone get their head halfway cut off with hedge clippers and the head
creatively,
as a gag.
Too.
And a lot of these are gag zombies because they come back multiple times. The head keeps getting kicked around the entire time through the party until it finally gets ground down in a blender. You get the zombie baby beating the shit out of Uncle Les constantly
yeah.
in one way or another. You get Uncle Les going crazy with two cleavers and hacks up a good 20 or 30 zombies into pieces in this manic moment of just hacking left and right, blood splattering all over the place. You get Void getting split in half and his organs falling out, but then his organs becoming a character in themselves where they pull themselves up and look in the mirror for a second with the, it looks like his kidneys on
yeah,
one
yeah,
side
yeah.
and then part of his intestines just staring in the mirror. And I'm like, those aren't the eyes, but they look like they would.
He's
be
just making a face,
organs,
yeah.
like a face of the organs. And then the organs kind of become a character. You have the reveal that all this shit that's been going on with Lionel, where he's been afraid of water and he sees the face of this woman and he sees his father drowning, because he said his father drowned. It turned out the father had had an affair with this blonde woman. Vera found out and drowned them both in a bathtub.
Right.
So she's the bad guy. She's the worst person of all. She's the main villain along with Uncle Les in this film.
And it seems like it's a far leap to go dramatically from all of these things that have happened. He kind of remembers something bad about his past, and then, like,
right.
bam, he gets hit
well,
with
he
this
finds
big...
He finds the trunk, and everything comes clear. But I think it's a good reveal to show that Lionel's mother is evil, so she has to be the final boss. One of the best scenes in this film, I mean, there's so many. We mm-hmm. could go on forever about this because there's so many specific zombies. When the guy gets pulled through this crawl space area and he's like, help, help, help. And you see that his legs have been completely down to the bones, yet he's still kicking them.
Right, yeah.
That scene in itself, amazing technical showcase.
Great.
You have the guy who had the hedge clippers of his head put off, and they put a lawn gnome into him, so he now has a lawn gnome for a head. The girl who gets bitten and the baby rips through her head.
I think that's my favorite. Because when the baby does it.
When
yeah.
the baby does it. I also think the girl who got punched through the face and then thrown into the light bulb when her head starts glowing.
Oh, yeah.
And that happens a lot. She's part of a lot of gags in there because she comes in, tries to attack that one girl, gets thrown into the light bulb, and then when Lionel falls from the ceiling, the electric cord pulls her up into there as well. And then the fire starts. I mean, it's so much is happening. So many things are being destroyed. So many zombies are attacking everybody at one time. It is such a technical showcase. I don't know how you get something like that filmed and have it look as good as it does. Then we now end up at the moment where Lionel gets thrown out through a window and he kicks open the door as Paquita is about to get killed. He's holding this lawnmower strapped around him. Party's over. Revs that thing up. And this is where the film hits 11. He just starts going through the zombies with this lawnmower. I think I read that they were pumping out 5 gallons of blood per second from the lawnmower.
Like, as he was for the effect?
For the effect. Oh, 5 gallons per second.
Pouring. I believe it.
Absolutely.
It's a shower.
It's a shower of blood, gore, and bone pulp and everything just mixing together into this pink goo.
Right. So, and I think that would immediately want to lead into trivia, the facts about this movie, because at this point, it's insane that this movie was even made for double what the actual budget even is. You can't even make this movie for $6 million nowadays, let alone $3 million in 1992.
Right.
I'm very impressed with the utilization of that money and the utilization and the reusing of all of these props and effects, because the reason that we keep seeing all of these zombies and these character zombies, like the father, the priest, all of these other things, is because they want to get longevity out of those effects and characters for that long. That's why we see these four characters and zombies. Once somebody's made into a zombie, they pretty much stick around until the end of the movie.
Right.
Let's talk more about what made this movie so special on a technical level in the form of facts.
There's not a ton. What's kind of aggravating is there's no real definitive Blu-ray release of this, so there's not an actual what I really want out of it is a behind the scenes documentary. I know there's a really short one that does exist,
but that does not do it justice. I saw that also on YouTube, by the way. You can see this whole movie on YouTube for free.
He bought the rights back. Peter Jackson has the rights to those older films that he did. And apparently has a ton of footage, but not enough time to go through all of it to actually put together a definitive release where we would actually see a documentary of what went behind the scenes to make this film. I do know that when Lionel finally meets his mother at the end, who is now, she's turned into a giant Muppet creature. Huge, very, very Meet the Feebles-esque. When he is going back into her womb, because she splits open and he falls back inside of it and he has to cut his way out.
Never mind the very disturbing poetry of that.
Absolutely. And she's naked too. So it's these like really weird giant boobs in this. She just looks like a weird beast creature. Her face starts falling off. He cuts through her. I think in that scene, they use something like 300 liters of blood just for the rebirth scene of him pouring out of her.
Right.
Absolutely insane. Absolutely a waterfall geyser of blood pouring out. So much. Most movies that are even gore films don't even have that much blood in it.
They must have known somebody at like a
small scene.
They must have known somebody at like a corn syrup depository or something.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, you make your own fake blood, and if a lot of your budget goes towards that and you're working with, you know, Peter Jackson used to do a lot of, I mean, he did a lot of his own effects for Bad Taste. I think he was his own special effects guy.
Right.
He made all the alien stuff for that. He made all the gore effects. So he had experience doing that, and he worked on Meet the Feebles as well. And Weta was the company that worked with him on like Lord of the Rings and everything. But they started with him with Wingnut, which was the production company back in when he was doing Dead Alive. So this was a very talented group of people who all got together. A lot of gore people on this.
Legendary gore people, at least by now.
In my mind, they're legendary gore people. They're not household names in the way that Tom Savini or Stan Winston are when it comes to creature effects and things like that, or Rob Bottin. But in my mind, these guys are like the unsung heroes. And most of them are working on the stuff for the Lord of the Rings now and the more digital side of things and some of the practical effects. I really would love to see that team come back and do another fully practical effect gore film. I think Peter Jackson's done a lot of stuff now mean, he even admitted that The Hobbit was rushed and it was way too much CG and it wasn't what it should have been. I would like to see him get back to his roots and make something as ridiculously fun and over the top as Dead Alive.
You feel like he's kind of lost his way a bit?
It's how I feel about most horror directors. I feel the same way about Sam Raimi.
Evil
Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Quick and the Dead, all great films. And then things like Oz, Great and Powerful, a CG bloated mess.
Yeah, Drag Me to Hell to a lesser extent. He gave it a shot.
Drag Me to Hell for a while was considered the unofficial Evil Dead 4, but then some of the CG in that, he could have gone practical again. Mm-hmm. And I understand practical is a very frustrating thing to do because you have to make sure you're capturing it all on camera. But the quality of what you get surpasses any bloated CGI.
Oh yeah, mess. And we've talked about this before. It's that tangential, like, right, light hitting something real effect that uncanny valley just cannot capture.
Well, and the actors can actually react to it.
Right.
And they can be in the moment with it. That is what makes Dead Alive so absolutely amazing. When Uncle Les gets turned into that weird creature almost from when Vera rips half of his spine out, so his head is just bobbing around.
I think my favorite reaction is actually in the cemetery scene when we see that Punk's rib cage just get splattered open and then he goes flying through the air,
yeah,
and lands on his friend, and his friend just goes, "Aah!" The most, like, amazing scream come out of this hardcore biker gang guy. That's the kind of reaction that you can only get when somebody just falls on top of you.
Right.
And that's kind of the thing that we're missing nowadays.
Yeah. And I also love some of the gags where Lionel's trying to run away from the zombies and he's slipping in the blood and it's just,
right,
he's just running in, he's running and not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he finally, in order to get a grip on things, steps on the body parts to get his footing as he's going through it. You even get exploding heads in this. You get exploding bodies. Some of that doesn't make sense, but it doesn't matter because there's so much. I mean, we could go through each individual zombie on this, and it would take hours and hours and hours to go through how much of a technical showcase this film is.
So to wrap up, what would you recommend Dead Alive for people that actually want to see this movie, or what would you expect?
If you are a huge fan of comedy horror, if you're a huge fan of gore, and you have to have a strong stomach for this one. It's definitely intense. There's a lot of gross out moments. It's all done in jest, I would say. But if you want to see something that you've never seen before and you'll probably never see again, there's nothing out there that exists that really is on the same level as Dead Alive.
There really isn't. I don't think that I've seen anything that can, again, show an immense technical aptitude for effects and creative makeup and gore,
yeah,
that I think I've ever seen in a hour and a half long span.
Great lighting as well. I mean, the lighting when they're in the house and you get the colored lights coming through
and that green coming out, like in Reanimator, like,
right,
you get to see that, like, very retro sort of feel with the lighting.
Right. And it has this feel to it that kind of combines a lot of amazing horror that I've seen over the years into one film. So you end up with a film that has, like, a basic look to it at times, but when shit hits the fan, they definitely change the lighting a lot. They change the way the feel is for it. When the gore really gets ramped up, it almost seems a little surrealistic. It's like they kind of channeled Dario Argento's color palette a little bit.
In a weird way, yes, because whenever you see these weird effects or these crazy, crazy scenes, the camera gets tilted a little bit. You get a bit more Dutch angled, big,
yeah,
heavy zoom ins or zoom outs,
right,
and, like, lots of movement and momentum and manic energy that the film has once things start to ramp
up. Amazing amount of physical comedy.
Yeah.
So it definitely channels more of the early Sam Raimi stuff as well. You're dealing with a lot of very intense zombie gore, which goes beyond what George Romero was even putting out.
And I think that's kind of the best recommendation that I could give it. It's the fact that it wears its influences on its sleeve and still manages to bring out something completely original and fresh and something that I didn't even really know how to feel about, but I couldn't help but recommend.
I have to say, if anybody asks me what my favorite horror film of all time is, it's Dead Alive.
Really?
Absolutely, man. Because it's everything that I want from a movie put into one.
Interesting.
I think Eli Roth said it best. It was the only movie he's ever seen that was able to satisfy his bloodlust.
Okay. Well,
and it's true, because when
from
you're
Eli Roth,
this,
I'm sure that's a very, very tall order.
I think it is, because, you know, we're talking about a guy who made Hostel, you know, right. And a lot of the other stuff Eli Roth has done is very intense. The Green Inferno and films like that.
Not nearly as fun as Dead Alive.
Not nearly as fun as Dead Alive. I will, and Cabin Fever, which I will say Cabin Fever was definitely fun. The original, they remade it last year, shot for shot, script, or I think it's the exact same script and might be shot for shot, but apparently is very inferior to the original. I don't know why they do that with films. But that's beside the point.
That's more of the politics of filmmaking. So, I think that is going to do it for us here for this episode of Oh the Horror. Thank you guys so much for watching, listening, however you decide to do it. I think you could watch with your ears. You could do that.
Yeah.
So, thanks again. You could check us out on Facebook and Twitter. You could follow us at Oh the Horrorcast.
On Twitter, yeah.
On Twitter. And find us on Facebook. Just spell out our name. You could find us there. And if you have any questions or suggestions for the show, be sure to email ohthehorrorcast@gmail.com. And I am Steve Allman, the filthy newbie.
And I am Rob Holmes.
And we're going to see you guys next time.
Horror. Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Horror. Now, it is time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Horror. When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk.